attention, please. Kibachong, everyone. My name is Sonia Shreve. Your park is a lot of forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a perfect day, the honor to present to you the sons and daughters of each able now in the sanctuary. It's on the final seats of Sabbath services.
Now have your attention, please. I have a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of each able now in the sanctuary. Now I'd like to turn it over to the queens of the House of Yah.
What is a perfect plan to save all of mankind from the sins of men? I created
Shabbat Shalom once again. It's now my honor to turn the services over to the great son of Israel, Abel, Deacon Buffalo Bill Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated, may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today I'm going to be talking about serving like Yeshua Messiah, our example. Now, first, if you'll turn in your books of Yahweh to Galatians 5 and verse 13. And that's on page 914. For you were called into liberty, brothers, but not liberty to be instruments of carnality, but through the love of Yahweh serve one another. Yes, we should be serving one another. This is what the theme for this feast is. Yeshua is one example of servitude. In Yochanan Mark 6, the subtitle is Feeding the 5,000. Now, verse 35, we'll look at verse 35. It was already late in the day when the disciples came to him and said, This is a deserted place, and the hour is already late. Send them away so they may go to the surrounding country and villages and buy food for themselves, for they have nothing to eat. Yeshua answered and said to them, you give them something to eat. They said to him, do you want us to buy 200 denarii worth of bread and feed them? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded everyone to sit down in companies on the green grass. Then they sat down in ranks of hundreds and fifties. And when he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up toward heaven, gave thanks, broke the loaves, and gave to them to his disciples to set before them. And he also divided the fish among them. They ate and they were satisfied. And they gathered up 12 baskets full of scraps from the bread and fish. And those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men. Yeshua never thought about his wants or what he wanted to do. He always thought about others' needs. This is something he always said to his disciples. He wasn't a self-serving person like everyone else. Remember, self-serving gematria is 666. He always worried about others and what they wanted. He never told his disciples, all those people can go find food elsewhere. I'm too tired, or I got this, or I want to go do this, or I want to do that. He always worried about what they wanted, what they needed. He set an example of righteousness. Now, a servant is not supposed to argue, and a true servant, a servant of Yahweh, isn't lazy. We as servants, must take on a low form, because servants never try to rule or take command. Unruly in gematria is 666, so is stubborn and headstrong. These are all things that we cannot be. These are things that we have to refrain from being. Now in the 8th book of Yisrael, part 2, chapter 12, verse 10, it says, we brought out in 2006 the conception of the nuclear baby, and of course we showed Yahweh held this back, or is holding it back for you, our people, to be converted, repent and be converted. Get all the flaws out of yourself. Deny yourselves, the apostle said. Deny yourselves. Put down your own feelings and serve the written word. Start denying yourself and raising your brothers and sisters above you, as Yeshua Messiah taught us. Another excellent example of servitude is above all Yahweh. Genesis chapters 1 and 2 show how Yahweh served. Think about it. If Yahweh did not serve his creation, we would not be here. In the 11th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 13, verse 53, it says, verse 11, for 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. And of course, if you just take that word and say, well, he rested, meaning in your mind, or what Satan wants you to believe in your mind, that he sat down, he didn't do anything. Not taking the rest of the scriptures, not even knowing that the rest of the scriptures, one would believe that. But if you knew the rest of the scriptures, plus the actions of Yeshua Messiah himself, then you'd know that it was a lie. Yahweh did not sit down. He worked and he took care of those people. He taught them and he made a Sabbath a delight for them. That's your training today. You are to become like Yahweh and Yahshua, who set a perfect example and now has the reward. The authority where he's above even the heavenly beings now. That's the opportunity you have to be yourself, with humility. That's what Yahweh's hunting. We have to overcome, we're training to overcome all sin and put aside our stubborn and unrighteous pride and be low servants. We're not just supposed to be a servant at Yeshua's memorial when we wash each other's feet. We're supposed to be a servant all year. In the 10th book of Yisrael, part 2, chapter 22, verse 126, it says, "Holy, holiness is unselfishness. It's unselfish acts to your fellow man, like Yahshua Messiah himself displayed in saying, 'You don't rule people like this, you serve people.' And I did not come to be a ruler or a dictator. I came to show you your sins and turn you from breaking Yahweh's laws and bring you into the same character as myself, wanting to serve." Well, that was Yahshua, a humble, and being a servant, riding on donkeys, training those donkeys to be servants. Now, we should always partake in servitude as Yahshua did, a lowly servant, not a smart-aleck, rebellious fool. Yahshua was always about his father's business, and Yahweh's business wasn't being a self-serving God. Remember, self-service 666. In the 9th book of Yisrael, chapter 12, this is from Yeshua's memorial, page 113, chapter 12, and verse 3, it says, let's turn there and read that, by the way. Luke 22. This is what the world hated about Yahshua. He didn't pick himself as a god or a warrior, but he came as a servant to his people, and that's the way he's going to come to us too. Luke 22, verse 26. He says, "But this not must not be among you." Verse 25. So he said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise rulership over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors." Verse 26. "But this must not be so among you, for whoever is the greatest among you, let him be the youngest, and whoever is first, like the one who serves." Who serves, and that's what he did. And verse 80, he became a servant instead of a leader. He was the lowest slave to this night to his disciples. He is still to us today, but Yahweh set him as high priest. The lowest slave is the highest of all, except the Father. The Father is over Yahshua because he was the greatest slave of all and willing to see that his son went through this horrible night he went through 2,000 years ago. Yahshua gave up his life so that the people who sinned in ignorance could be served. Now, let's go back to Galatians. Galatians 5. And verse 14. For truly everything in the law through the plan of Yahweh has been accomplished through this. You will love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you can't love your neighbor as yourself if you choose not to serve. If we're selfish, lazy, headstrong, self-serve, anything to do with the 666 system, we're not being a servant. We have to be like Yahshua. Yahshua was never sinned. Yahshua was always a servant that cared about others, not himself. He, as the apostle said, denied himself and started worrying about others. This is what we have to learn to do. So now I'll turn the services over to the great Deacon Shalomo.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. It's been a great feast, right? Praise Yahweh. You know, each and every one of us here is what makes this feast a great feast. No, it's not over yet, okay? We still have a lot to look forward to today, okay? We have ordinations, we have the community meal, the family meal, okay? We have a lot to look forward to, and a lot of great sermons too. Now, looking back on the feast, you know, so many great things occurred. I don't even know where to start, really. The serving, you know, everyone wanting to serve, that was the theme for the feast, but, you know, everyone took it to heart, and everyone really applied it, okay? Everyone wanting to serve. You know, I even saw, like, five-year-olds working in the fast food over here, making tacos and burgers. Okay, they want to serve too. And also the rejoicing, the people being willing to learn. They want to learn. And also the great food, okay? That's just a few things I wanted to hit on. Both physical and spiritual food. And then we've also learned a lot of many things from the sermons, like the benefits of servitude. You get benefits from serving, okay? And that's what brings joy, because you're actually getting benefits from the things Yahweh wants us to do. Now, when Yahweh says you must eat and you must rejoice, He sure will make a way for you to do it, won't He? Praise Yahweh. The free meals, you know, everything. He sure does make a way for us to do it. Now, it's the same way with overcoming. And that's what I want to hit on today. Overcoming. Yahweh wants us to overcome. And He makes ways. He helps us overcome also. Prayer is one way. Fasting. And also studying. Those are all ways that we know will help us overcome. But then the one I want to hit on today is setting your mind in advance. Okay, setting your mind in advance. Now, when you set your mind in advance, knowing what you're going to say and do ahead of time will help you when the need arises. I have a quote here. This is from the Respect Unit. Respect Unit Peaceful Solution, page 195. It says, if you make no effort towards positive change, change might never occur. If you wait for others to make a change, change might never occur. The only way to ensure that things will change for the better is if you set your mind in advance and make the effort to make positive changes to the best of your ability. And that's what I seen at this feast. That's what I saw at this feast. Everyone putting forth the effort to make it a great feast. Okay? And Yahweh notices it. Praise Yahweh. Let's turn to Daniel. Let's turn over to Daniel. Daniel 1. This is an example of where Daniel set his mind in advance before he was given something. It's on page 671. It says, but Daniel purposed, verse 8, Daniel 1, verse 8. It says, but Daniel purposed in his heart, mind, that he would, well, let's, yeah, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the allotment of the king's food, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he asked the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. That word purpose is Hebrew word 7760. And as you see there, it means set, to put or place. Consider, determine, establish, and also set. What you see there is Daniel set his mind or he determined in his mind before the need arose, he said in his mind that he would not eat the king's food. And remember, we saw the same thing with King Shlomo, the Proverbs, where it says, when you're given to appetite, put a knife to your throat. Well, it doesn't mean kill yourself, but it means don't be given to appetite. Don't be willing to eat what they give you. And that's what Daniel did here. He set his mind in advance. And that's one thing we can do to help us overcome. If you set your mind in advance, you will know what to do in difficult situations. Situations that could influence you to make wrong choices. Let's turn over just one page over to Daniel 3. Two pages. Daniel 3, let's look at verse 14. Okay, chapter 3, the beginning is where King Nebuchadnezzar set up the image. And as, when you hear of the, he made a proclamation that when you hear of all these kinds of music, you were to fall down and worship. But let's look at verse 14. This is when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not fall down and worship. Now let's go to verse 14. It says, Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said to them, "It is true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up. Now, if you are prepared to fall down and worship the image which I have set up, at the time of you hear of the cornet and all the kinds of music, then it will be well with you. But if you refuse to worship, you will be thrown into the midst of the burning fiery furnace in the same hour. And what God is that? Is it that will deliver you out of my hands?" Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered King Nebuchadnezzar and said, "There's no need for us to answer you cautiously in this manner. For if we are thrown into the burning fiery furnace, our Father whom we serve is able to deliver us. And may he deliver us from your hands, O king." Verse 18, "But if he will not, may it also be known to you, O king, that we will not worship your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up." Okay, so they had set in their minds also that they were not going to partake of the gods. They weren't going to go to the world and partake of these things. Okay, even when they were faced with burning, okay, they still said, "We're not going to worship gods." And that's the same way our minds should be set. Praise Yahweh. If you turn over to Luke 4, it's on page 785. Luke 4, this is the example of where Satan tempted Yahshua. I just want to read a few verses. It says, let's start at verse 1. It says, "Then Yahshua, being filled with Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. For 40 days being tempted by the devil, during those days he ate nothing. And when they were ended, afterward he hungered." And then you see the devil offered him all these different things. Offered him even a high place, or offered him rulership over all these things. But then if you look down to verse 13, it says, "So when the devil had exhausted every temptation, she departed from him for a season." What you see in that story, if you read it, is Yeshua's mind was set on that he wasn't going to give in. His mind was set. And, you know, after, when he resisted Satan, all the temptations left. Now, I have a quote before I close here. I'm running out of time. 13th book of Israel, 13th book of Israel, chapter 4, verse 36, it says, "Set your mind in advance first, okay, to first shut your mouth. That's the hardest part. With a big fire, the tongue can start. And, you know, it's the tongue is what starts a lot of problems. And that's the first thing. Set your mind to first be quiet. Second book of Israel, chapter 28, verse 198. It says here, we would be much further along, I think, in our overcoming. I've begged you to fast, pray, and search your mind to overcome these things. Be prepared for them and set your mind in advance. I have done all of this in advance. And then from chapter 23, verse 55, the last one, it says, the only thing that prevents this from occurring is when you set your mind in advance. The only thing that will stop you from sinning is if you set your mind in advance. Okay, just like you plan your work day. Plan what you're going to do in difficult situations, okay? If we set our minds in advance, this is the only way to accomplish our goals. May Yahweh bless your understanding. And if y'all please stand, let's turn over to the great Khan, Benjamin Krause Hawkins.
Bach Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. We'll get right into this. This will be part two of the last sermon. We're going to continue in Zechariah 3, but first let's turn over to Revelation chapter 11. I don't know. Remember if I said, may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Revelation chapter 11, we're going to look at verse 18 on page 978. And it says, and the nations were angry, and your judgment has come, and the time of the dead, that they should be sentenced, and that you should give reward to your servants, the prophets, and to all the saints, to those who reverence your name, small and great, and should allow those to be destroyed who destroy the earth. Remember, Yahweh's not destroying anybody. He's not into that. That's not his business. Hopefully you picked this copy up of this new newsletter from this for this month, The Nations Are Angry. Okay, and you'll notice the very first scripture on there is what you just read. Okay, and there's a reason you're going to see. Now, let's turn, can I have my first slide? Remember this white stone with the three numbers, 17, 28, and 74, this stone of acquittal from Revelation 2:17. Remember, we're all part of this lot. We're the whole lot here, okay? And those that have died, those that are fixing to be rewarded, the prophets. Remember Daniel. Turn over to Daniel chapter 12. Daniel 12, we just heard about Daniel and his companions. Remember that word, companions. Daniel 12, let's look at verse 12 on page 684. It says, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. But he says, but go your way. But you, go your way, Daniel, until the end. For you will rest and stand in your lot at the end of the days. At the end of the days. Let's talk some more about that lot. Can I have my next slide? Turn over to Zechariah 3, 8, and 9. I'm going to read it again from last sermon. It says, hear now, O Yahshua the high priest, you and your companions who sit before you, for they are men wondered at. For behold, I will bring forth my servant the branch. For behold, the stone that I have laid before Yahshua, upon this stone complete knowledge and understanding is established. Behold, I will engrave its inscription, says Yahweh of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. Now, if you remember last time, we talked about, if I turn over to Deuteronomy 32 on page 175, we talked about, you know, those lot numbers, and this number here, remember the gematria of lot number 17, 28, and 74, the word number 344 came up, and we showed how that meant salvation, and 3,444 weeks after Pastor's birth to the day, he went to the UN to show this light to the nations. Not only that, he went to Israel. I mean, this man has been all over, okay, showing the way to peace to the nations, okay? All right, now, Deuteronomy 32, verse 9. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Okay. 32, verse 9 on page 174 says, Yahweh's portion is his people, Jacob is his allotted inheritance. If you put that into gematria, see that number 329 or 32:9? You're reading it right now, right? Did you just read that? I'm not going to go into all of that, but notice Jacob is also 329, 3290. Okay, Jacob. Also remember Isaiah 58, chapter or 58:14 that says, you know, that you'll ride upon the high places and you'll have the inheritance of Jacob, the heritage, the portion of Jacob. You know, today is 4:8:18, and it means ride, to ride, like to ride upon the high places. It's the same word that's used in that scripture. That's just a little bit of food for thought. Let's get into the gematria of this. Behold, I will engrave its inscription in Deuteronomy, Zechariah 3, 9. Here's the gematria. You see those numbers? Write them down. 613, 3678, and 4871. Remember that white stone with the inscription of those three lot numbers that are on it. That stone that was given, okay, to our overseer. The stone that was given to Yahshua to work with. Okay, let's look at some of these numbers. Let's start with 4871 because that's the Hebrew gematria. And you're going to see some familiar words. It means to draw. To draw. It's used in Exodus 20 verse or 2 verse 10, you know, where Moshe was drawn out of the water, drawn out of the multitudes, nations, peoples, and languages to draw out. Okay, it means, Moshe means to draw out. That's in the Hebrew. Now here's draw out in the Greek. It's 4871, and it means to be assembled, to meet with. It means to accumulate, to convene, to assemble together. And it's from this Greek word right here. It means together with, and it means it expresses an association with. It means joined close together in tight identification, closely identified together. You know, like Daniel and his companions that didn't eat the allotment of that king's food. Okay? He didn't eat of that king's food. And he didn't partake of the teachings of Babylon. Notice, it means companions, associates, together. Again, there's that word companions, right? We keep hearing about these companions of Yahshua, the ones that keep all of Yahweh's laws. Now let's go to the second number, 3678. 3678 means seat of honor. It means authority, official seat, thrones. Remember the thrones speaking of in Daniel 7? The thrones were set for judgment. And it means a seat of honor, which means like, you know, like of the high priest, or figurative of royal dignity, authority, and power. I see a bunch of royal saints out here right now with purple on, right? Not just purple on their in their clothing, but purple in their hearts and minds. You know, the actions and attitude of the saints this feast. Okay, now it also means a seat, stool, throne, and it mentions covered, you know, the protected place here at Abilene. It's from 3680, and it means covered, and it means to conceal, to cover, covered. It also means to forgive, you know. Our sins will be covered, atoned for, if we overcome. Remember that. Yahshua died for our sins, but we must overcome to qualify. And it also means to take refuge. Take refuge. It also means, I don't know about you, it means to plump. Anybody here getting a little plump? I know I am starting to notice my plumpness. But Yahweh said we would be pampered in the wilderness, right? He wasn't talking about diapers, you know. He was talking about feeding us to the full, you know, with the food and the spiritual food, okay? And it means to hide, secret, to cover, and to be sated or gorged with food. You know, sated, filled to the full with this knowledge that only comes from Yahweh's house, okay? Now let's look at 36:78. I told you I'm going to prove to you who he's working with, right? A little donkey. A little donkey. Now, who would that be? Remember, a little donkey is a donkey colt, right? That's right. Who said that? Us. Yes, that's right. Okay. It's from this Greek word right here, and it means a donkey or donkeys. Because remember, the donkey colt together with the donkey, right? Okay. Yahshua and this last day's work. And it's the word used in Matthew 21 where it shows Yahshua riding on the donkey and the donkey colt. And remember that word ride today. That's what that word means, ride. In Zechariah 9:9, that word ride goes to 48:18, which is today's date. Isn't that amazing? Okay? I don't know how that got there. Okay. The last number is 613. Well, we all know what that is, right? Well, we kind of think we do. But there's a little more to it. Here's Greek 613. It means to hide away, to conceal, to keep secret. Okay, just like you saw in that last number. It means to conceal, to keep secret, the protected place. You know, Yahweh hides these things from the wicked, but he's revealing them to his saints in these last days, his companions that are sitting at the feet of the greatest teacher in the world, joined together with him, tethered to the chosen branch voluntarily, okay? By the way, can you show that next slide? You see that? You see that donkey with the pack on his back? There's no ropes. He's looking at that olive tree, and he's not tethered by a rope or a chain, but voluntarily serving this work in these last days. Okay, now let's look at this next 613 in the Hebrew. It means a band or a bond. And it's from 612. And it means bonds. It's from this Hebrew word here, which is a car. And it means to tie, to bind, bound. And notice where it's used. Remember the donkey tied to the branch, the chosen branch? You see that? It's used in Genesis 49:11. Okay, he's showing you who he's working with, who his companions are in these last days. Now, I told you I would prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. If Yahweh's going to keep building, he's going to keep showing. But, you know, to me, it's just like such overwhelming evidence that's been presented in this court. But we're going to keep presenting. All right, so go to the next slide, please. Y'all remember that picture? That was seen on Yahweh 18, while we were having the peace conference here, the peace day, we had the nations come in along with us and join us and learn of this peaceful solution character education program that we've been ordained and taught to teach. Now, and I told you, you know, it looks a lot like a menorah, right? You see that? There's seven lights coming out of it. Okay. Well, you know, there's always something more behind everything, right? And I told you it was seen at 157. Can you go to the next slide? That picture was taken from the south gate, by the way, by a diligent deacon. paid, or 157, remember I showed it meant to love, beloved, friend, friends, you know, like companions, okay? And to show your love. Show your love. How do you show your love? Okay, you show your love by loving Yahweh with your whole heart, soul, might, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself, like we were doing at that time when we brought these people here and we show them this peaceful solution. We show them how to stop groping in the dark. Okay, we were all taking part in this. We all had a part in it. But you know, there's something more behind that cloud, okay, that Yahweh saved for today. Can you show the next slide? That's a zoom, a close-up. Just take a look at it. I want you to look very closely, and then we're going to show you the next slide. Go ahead and show the next slide. Do you notice a door? That's the temple model. Look real close. Go ahead and go to the next slide. That's the holy place in that temple model. Go back up to the next, go back to the next slide again, the last slide. You're going to notice a wall around that city that you can see there. There's buildings in the background, if you notice, all around it. That's the Temple Mount on the platform that Pastor went to measure in 1982. That temple model is sitting right over here on the west end of the sanctuary, the northwest end. Okay? And it's like the exact replica of what you would see if you would turn it around and look at the walled city and the Temple Mount. But guess what? There's more. Go to the next slide, please. And the next slide. Okay, side by side. Okay? Can you see it? You see the buildings in the background. You see the wall around it. And you see some figures there. There's seven figures. Seven individuals. Keep that in your mind. I told you this was seen at 157. Can you go to the next slide? Page 157 in Deuteronomy 12. But you are to seek the habitation of your father, the house of Yahweh, the place which Yahweh your father shall choose out of all your tribes to establish his name, and there you must go. There you must bring your burnt offerings and sacrifices and tithes and special gifts you have vowed to give, your freewill offerings and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. There in front of Yahweh your father, you and your family shall eat as all of you are doing right now and rejoice, okay? And you shall rejoice in all that you have put your hand to do because Yahweh your father has blessed you. You must not at all do as we are doing here this day, every man doing whatever's right in his own eyes. Now watch this. Watch this. I'm not done. I know you want to sing out and cry out to Yahweh, and you're going to. Very loudly here in a minute. Can you go to the next slide? You see that picture? The rewards of the righteous. You see seven individuals lined up there. Count them. Receiving their rewards. That's in the Mark of the Beast, chapter 13. Can you go to the next slide? Next slide? No, the next slide. Oh, there you go. Notice what page. You see the page number? And notice the scripture above it, Revelation 11:18. And the nations were angry. And the time has come that your servants are going to receive their rewards, the resurrection, the rewards. Do you want those rewards? Well, you know, the rewards are being a priest, a king, and a teacher in Yahweh's house. Those are the rewards that are going to be handed out. But hold on. Hold on. We got one more thing. Go to the next, last slide. I showed you what was in the Mark of the Beast, the soft cover, on page 157. Right here. See? Can I see that? Page 157, the soft cover. And then last night I noticed, well, wait, the hard cover doesn't match the soft cover. Uh-oh, right? Uh-oh. Yahweh must not have known what he was doing, right? Okay, show the next slide. Last slide. Here's page 157 in this one. And notice, go back to the slide. Notice what it talks about. It talks about the lot, the portion that we're going to receive together. Revelation 20, verse 6, a section or allotment, a division or share, a portion, those who overcome. Turn to Revelation 26. Blessed and holy is he that has part or share or portion in the first resurrection. On such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of Yahweh and the Messiah and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Do you all realize that all came together during this feast? All working together, all of us working together. The donkey, the colts. Man, this is wonderful. Y'all should be so. Time is growing closer. Beware, okay? This next 40 some odd days is going to be a real difficult, but we can do it, right? Keep your mind focused on what you just saw and what Yahweh's showing you, okay, when you start having those doubts. And may Yahweh bless all of you, and if you'd all please stand. It's my great honor and privilege to turn it over to the great Kohen Yehuda Hawkins. Shalom.
I got to read all this to you, so we're going to be a while. Oh, no. Just not really. Please be seated. Everyone turn to page 628 in your Book of Yahweh. We're going to look at Yekeskia 4:13 and then 4:16. It ties in. The pastor said these things he wanted to be brought out, so we're going to do it. And then when we're through doing this, I want you to turn to page 972 after we get through with these passages in Yekeskia, because I want to tell you something that's really important, and I hope it doesn't get me shot, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Yekeskia 4:13. Then Yahweh said, so will the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles where I will drive them. In other words, I'm going to drive you out of town. Get out of town. The words I will drive them that are written in Yekeskia 4:13 are translated from the Hebrew word adicham. This word is listed on page S78 of volume 2 of the Hebrew Aramaic English Dictionary by Marcus Jastrow, which shows this word means to be banished, to be led astray to idolatry or God worship. He who says, let us go and worship, a prophet that led a town astray. So what Yekeskia 4:13 is saying is, then Yahweh said, so will the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, the Goyim, the nations. For they were dispersed among the nations because they were led astray by false prophets who told them to go and worship gods. And by the way, Yekeskia 4:13 does have an Atgash code, the Aleph Tau. Now look down at Yekeskia 4:16. Let's keep going. We got to move. He said to me, son of man, truly I will cut off the supply of bread in Jerusalem. Oh, they're going to close the Walmarts? They will eat bread by weight. Oh, you go to a butcher shop to get your bread so they can weigh the amount of it is per ounce. And in anxiety and drink water by measure and in desolation. Well, that may occur in those polluted creeks in Michigan, but praise Yahweh, we have the best water in the world. Okay, the words I will cut off that are in Yekeskia 4:16 are translated from the Hebrew word shabar. This word is listed on page 700 of the Analytical Hebrew and Chaldee Lexicon by Benjamin Davidson, which shows this word means definition, interpretation, or solution. The word supply that is written in Yekeskia 4:16 is translated from the Hebrew word matah. This word is listed on page 546 of the Analytical Hebrew and Chaldee Lexicon by Benjamin Davidson, which shows this word means branch. Sound familiar? The word bread that is written in twice in Yekeski 4:16 is translated from the Hebrew word lakam. This word is listed on page 394 of a complete Hebrew and English critical and pronouncing dictionary by William L. Roy, which shows this word means the books of Messiah, the books about Yahshua, the word of Yahweh, or salvation. The word Jerusalem that is written in Yekeskiah 4:16 is translated from two Hebrew words, which are Yaru and Shalom. The Hebrew word Yaru is listed on page 436 of volume 2 of the Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament, but by Coiler and Baumgartner, which shows this word means a priest who teaches or instructs. The Hebrew word Shalom that is listed on page 1533 of volume 4 of the Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament by Coiler and Baumgartner, which shows this word means to keep peace. The word water that is written in Yekeskiah 4:16 is translated from the Hebrew word Yamim. This word is listed on page 574 of a Hebrew and Chaldee lexicon to the Old Testament by Julius First, which shows this word means a sea of people. So this is what Yekeskiah 4:16 is saying. He said to me, Son of man, truly the branch, the priest who teaches peace, will teach them what the word of Yahweh says. The people will hear this and fear, because the word of Yahweh will weigh heavily upon them, and desolation will be measured out to them. In other words, remember, they were cut to the heart, it said. They couldn't stand it. The truth can never be destroyed, and people don't like it. The reason the word of Yahweh weighs heavily upon these people, and they were desolated, even dispersed around the world, is because they listened to false prophets who deceived them to reject Yahweh, his name, and his laws for gods. That's what Yekeskiah 4:13 and 4:16 are saying. And how they are tied up? Well, Yekeskiah 4:16 has the Atpash code Yod Mim. It's there. So they are related. They interpret one another, or they go together as one point. False teachers started deceiving these people. They went for the false deceit. And yes, the judgment bore heavily upon them. The word of Yahweh tells them they are wrong and they don't like it. And who is the only man in the world of not afraid to tell them the truth? You're right. But there's a point I want to make here. These deceivers have told you a lot of things. How about this one? How many of you have heard of Pope Joan? J-O-A-N. Surely we have some ex-Catholics out there. I was studying to be a priest. I heard of it. The point of the matter is, in ancient Catholic history, they believed there was a woman named Pope Joan, that she was the actual Pope. It's a legend. The only problem, it so happens, and evil happens, this legend is true. It is historically backed up by your own Bible. Turn to Revelation chapter 2, verse 20. Revelation 2, verse 20. Revelation 2, verse 20. This is Pope Joan. Nevertheless, I have a few things against you, because you permit that woman, Jezebel, to seduce my servants, to commit fornication, and to eat things sacrificed to gods. That Pope Joan was Jezebel. Does Jezebel mentioned in 1 Kings chapter 16 through 2 Kings chapter 9? She told King Ahab what to do in that country and his son. And righteous men of Yahweh were murdered because of her. Babylon, the whole thing fits like a glove. There is no question. Jezebel was Pope Joan. That was the Pope, or one of the first popes, among Babylon and that particular religious faith called the Nimrod system. There is no question. Your own Bible and history itself proves this. Jezebel told the priests of God what to do. She was the vicar or ruler of what was to be the Catholic religion coming up. Jezebel. But it is in their own Bible. See this. This is the DeWay version, a Catholic Bible. If you'll notice, it says the same thing the book of Yahweh says. What does it say? Jezebel? It said, nevertheless, I have a few things against you. You have something to do with that Jezebel. J-E-Z-E-B-E-L in the Douay version and the King James version and most American and modern English versions, including the Jerusalem Bible and the Catholic Bible of 1972. The point of the matter is, this lie has got, this is not a lie. This is one legend that is true. Jezebel was Pope Joan. She was the leader of the mindset and religion that became the Catholic faith. It's just like they swear up and down that Peter, we know his real name was Kepha, that Peter was the first pope. But then they tell you, priests of Yah, of God are not supposed to marry unless we give you an excuse or a dispensation. Well, guess what? If it is true that Kepha was the first pope, Peter, there were 11 that followed him, there was one little problem they never could cover up. Every one of these men were Hebrews, and every one of these men were married. The point is, the Roman Church knows this is true. It's in their Bible. They can't hide it any longer. Whether they like it or not, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And the house of Yahweh is a pillar and ground of the truth. And your job, part of your job, I don't care if you're a youngster or you are somebody just baptized, your job, brothers and sisters, is to make sure this work gets accomplished and the whole world will know the truth so that they can be set free. May Yahweh bless your understanding. May Yahweh defend us against our enemies, and I mean in a loving, kind way by converting them. And would you please stand and now turn the services over to the great Kohan Ilya Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. Be turning over to Deuteronomy chapter 12 on page 157, like the great Kohan Benjamin just spoke about. But Deuteronomy chapter 12, and we want to address some things. Remember, the house of Yahweh and the administration of the house of Yahweh, our jobs as an administration is to take the things that we're taught and to make sure that they are given to the people. And if the people have questions, if the people have situations that arise, then if they're not too hard, then we're to deal with them. Otherwise, the head of the house of Yahweh advises us and counsels us and guides us. Well, the things that we want to understand that have been coming out recently, and today we're going to speak about two things. And I want you to remember influences. And in the character unit on page 60, we learned that an influence is something or someone that has the ability to affect your attitude, your way of thinking, feeling, or behaving. And we also know in that very same chapter of chapter 3 that we're told never to underestimate the power of an influence. And that warning comes in Deuteronomy chapter 12. We see verse 1, it says, "These are the statutes and judgments, the law which you must observe to do in the land which Yahweh, the heavenly Father of your fathers, is giving you to possess all the days that you live upon the earth." In verse 2, "You must utterly destroy all the places where the nations you shall drive out worship their gods." Notice they worship, they serve their gods on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every spreading tree. "You must destroy their altars, break down their sacred pillars, images of their sun god Baal, and burn their sacred poles, Asherah poles. Cut down the images of their gods, their Elohim, Teraphim, and wipe out their names from those places." And notice verse 4. "You must not." Must not. That means there's no other option if you want life. "You must not worship Yahweh your Father in such ways." Yahweh your Father is not a God. He's not an El. Well, we know there's many things that have come out of Egypt and have come down through society, and we see them in our society today, and some of them take place in forms of fashion. And we see a lot of it when we go out in the missionary. We see a lot of it in the schools. And we see people doing things, wearing things, acting certain ways. But we know where it comes from. But if we know where it comes from and we don't share it with our youth, and our youth does it, who do you think is held accountable? We are. We can't really expect a young person, a child, or an adult to know something unless they're taught. Now, a lot of this comes with studying and, of course, applying ourselves and putting forth everything that we have with what we've been given. Always remember Revelation 12:9, that Satan deceived the whole world. The only place that deception can be removed is at the house of Yahweh. And then also remember Genesis chapter 3 and verse 1. It said that that serpent was subtle and crafty, to the point where you may be saying, you're telling me this little thing right here can keep me out of the kingdom of Yahweh. It's not the little thing you're holding in your hand. It's the meaning and the representation, the way they worship their gods, the influence that was very powerful. Don't underestimate it, because it has caused society to go this way. Well, there's one thing we want to bring out first, and I want to first state that this is not directed at the women, because the men can fall in the same category and do fall in the same category. And a fashion that's going on today is known as a choker. If you can zoom out, it's called a choker. Now, a choker is a close-fitting necklace worn around the neck. Well, where did these chokers originate? Why would we say they're not acceptable? Well, if you notice, it says golden choker necklaces were crafted by Sumerian artists around 2500 BC. Chokers have been around for thousands of years, first gracing the world's earliest civilizations. Ancient Egypt, for one, that's where it started. Remember, Yahweh brought his people out of Egypt. Now, in addition to the Sumerians and the Mesopotamia, if you notice, historically, it was associated with high fashion, but could take on a different meaning under different circumstances. Women wore red ribbons around their necks to pay homage to those who met their death at the guillotine. So they wore it as a memorial to the dead. But then you have, however, at the same time, in the late 19th century, a plain, thin, red, or black ribbon choker has ties to prostitution. Back in the early 1930s and even in the 1800s, to identify a prostitute, that's what they wore. It was to actually show people who were interested, this is what I do. It was advertisement. A black woven choker ribbon could signify secret lesbianism. So obviously it's perversion, it's sickness. Now, it doesn't seem that it could be that bad, but when you consider where it comes from and the meanings behind it and the influences given, that's what we have to consider. It's merely a piece of fabric. But let me ask you, if you see a tree that's out in the forest, is it evil? But when it's taken in a house and used as a Christmas tree, does it become evil? Yes, you're told to destroy them. Notice it says, chokers have gone as far back as Egypt and even adorned the necks of royal pharaohs and queens of England. Are strung with what? While some were hammered with gold or strung with diamonds and pearls, others took the form of simple red ribbons bought from the market. But once again, we're looking at what was done and why it was done. Now, we ran this through gematria, a close-fitting necklace worn around the neck. So when we put that in, of course, you see that the Jewish number was 2399, the English was 2952, and the simple was 492. Now, if it's sin, you think it would show, right? Should. Number 2399 from 2398, it means a crime or its penalty, grievous offense, sin. From 2398, to miss. Miss what? You could miss out on what you've been offered. To sin. Forfeit. Forfeit the promise. Forfeit your inheritance. Now, you could also, it says, led astray, condemn, bear the blame. Commit sin, notice. But notice it also has some other words in there that you can do if you've ever done such a thing. And this is men and women. Men can do it too. Don't think it's just women. You can cleanse, purge, purify yourself, make reconciliation. What does that mean, to make reconciliation? How could we atone for such a thing if we've ever fallen into it? Go to the priest, make confession. You know, remove the God worship from us. This is a part that's very interesting. It says also, notice that word, kokizitly. I had to go through a lot of speech therapy this morning for that. Notice what, now I can't show you, you can look this up for yourself. You can never show the full definition for this in the setting we're in, but you can look it up for yourself. But notice, characteristically, we're talking about a character of someone. Flirtatious. Look up that word flirtatious on your own time. It is not in the character of Yahweh. It is not in the modesty of positive character. It takes a totally different meaning. It ties into what Con Yehuda was just bringing about Jezebel. Especially in a teasing. Are we supposed to be teasing with bodies in the house of Yahweh? No, absolutely not. Also from word 492, it means concealment. Of course, it was a representation of what was really going on. They didn't openly speak it, but it was there. But notice from 489, which comes bereavement. Now bereavement, that goes back to the memorial of the dead. Remember it said that they wore the red ribbons for the cutting off of the guillotine, the necks of people that were cut off at the guillotine. And then 481, notice it means to be tongue-tied, such as, why are you doing this? I guess. Notice to be dumb. Does that mean our people are dumb? No, absolutely not. But it is talking about something that is dumb. If you'll turn over to 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and it says, now concerning the spiritual gifts, brothers, I do not want you to be ignorant. So I don't want you to be unaware of these things. You know that when you were heathen, when you were unlearned, before you received this knowledge, you were led astray by these what gods? By these dumb gods, these Elohim. However, you were being led. These things, this fashion that these gods of Hollywood wear, and it seems interesting. We remember what King Saul did? He was told, you go into that land and you destroy everything it's God worship. Do not bring it back. So if you have something that's God worship, don't throw it in the drawer. Destroy it. Get rid of it. Cast it from among you. Don't let it come into your life. Remove it far from you. Moving along, Pastor brought up the topic of cartoons. Well, how does cartoons tie into chokers? Well, we're talking about God worship. And remember what he said was in the Sistine Chapel. All of the animation Michelangelo had put up there. Nakedness exposed, things that were done inappropriately. Do you think there's any education with what's done in the Sistine Chapel? No, none whatsoever. So you look up the word cartoon, and of course it says a simple drawing showing the features of its subjects in a humorously exaggerated way, especially a satirical one in a newspaper or magazine. So cartoons' origin, of course, are to make fun of people. Notice satirically. Satire, it means the use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics and other topical issues. So it's used to degrade people. It's kind of like if you're sitting in school and your teacher's talking and you're drawing a big goofy picture of your teacher, that's God worship. If you're doing something that's disrespectful, drawing something that's disrespectful, that's God worship. That takes the form of insults. Does that love your brother as yourself? No. Remember it also said caricatures. Well, a picture, description, or imitation of a person or a thing which in certain striking characteristics are exaggerated in order to create a comic or grotesque effect. In other words, you make it so you can help make fun of this other person you're drawing this picture of. It's done to world leaders all the time. You see it in the newspapers all the time. Well, we looked up the word cartoon in Gematria also. Cartoon. Now, car comes from the Italian word cartone. Cartone, it means card. That's what it originally started out as, a card, a piece of paper. Tune is an animated character. Tune is an animated character. So you have car and tune. Well, word 324, from word 323, it means prince. But notice word 323. And that means a satrap. A satrap, or governor of a main province of Persia. Well, a satrap was a provincial governor in the ancient Persian Empire. We don't have time to go into it right now, but read Daniel chapter 10, and you'll find out that's one of the four horns that were ruling in the time of Persia. That's one of those four horns in that day, and it's one of the four ruling kingdoms that was absorbed in to the Greek Empire. So looking up those words, starting out with 516, and it's from 408, you notice it says, Thou must not destroy. Well, thou must not destroy. But what did we read in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 4? Did it say you must not destroy or you must destroy? So do you think the Persian Empire would tell you not to destroy them? Why would they do such a thing? Because notice it comes to nothing. Worth nothing. It's worthless. There's no education in this whatsoever. Why would they not want you to do it? Well, one, it keeps you ignorant. It keeps you ignorant. And the Apostle Shaul said, brothers, I would that you were not ignorant concerning this message. Remember, Hosea 4:6 says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Well, why is all this important? Well, once again, we talked about the cartoon, and it's Italian cartoon. Toon, a cartoon film. It's a character in a cartoon film. And then we have cartoon in 86. Why would it be so important that you not destroy it? Why would you need to hold on to it and say, cartoons aren't bad? Notice it comes from an Egyptian word. It means to kneel, to bow the knee. Turn over to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 19. To bow the knee to this four kings, these teachings from the four kings, this goofidity, this teaching of satire, of making fun and ridicule and dragging people down and insulting them. Is any of that in the character of Yahweh? No, absolutely not. Well, in 1 Kings, it's found on page 295. If you remember Ilya, when he was given a job to do, notice the Malak of Yahweh. In chapter 19, and verse 7, page 295, the Malak of Yahweh came to him the second time and touched him and said, rise up and eat, because the journey is too much for you. Then look to verse 9. He went into a cave and spent the night in that place, and behold, the word of Yahweh came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Ilya? In verse 10, he answered, I have been very zealous for Yahweh, Father Almighty, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. They didn't tear down the altars of the gods. They tore down what Yahweh put up. They went to their god worship. They went that way. Your prophet with the sword, I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me. But what was Yahweh's reply? Look down to verse 18. Yet I have remaining in Israel 7,000, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal. Now, if you remember, that word Baal was brought out yesterday by the great Kahan. The world in Gematria is Baal. They haven't bowed down their knees to what this world is offering. They've turned from it. They've put it away. If they had it, they destroyed it. They didn't show honor to these gods in any which way, shape, or form. Well, in 2011, the House of Yahweh came out with animation. And there was a deacon who worked very diligently because we wanted to bring something out for our children that would teach our children to make right choices. Now, in 2011, he came up with a name for it, but he hadn't told me. And I took the test disc that he gave me and I showed it to Pastor. And Pastor seen it, and he really liked it, and he said, you know, we can't call this cartoons because that's God worship. And he didn't say any more than that. And he goes, what do you think we should call it? And I said, well, it's part of the peaceful solution. He goes, Peace Tunes, that's what we're going to call it right there, Peace Tunes. I went back to the deacon that did the animation, and I said, we need to call it, and he already had Peace Tunes written down on a notebook. Now, I asked him, I said, did Pastor tell you that? No. But it already had the word Peace Tune on it. Now, why would we do that? Well, notice, Peace Tune in Gematria, 314, 564, and 94. Notice 314, it means generally late, last, Western. Like the Western lamp, the education that comes forth, the last, the latter, this last day's work. as Isaiah 2:2 and Micaiah 4:1-3 shows. Also 5:64, talkative. In animation, that's all you use is your audio. You have to be very talkative. Notice it says to answer, appoint, publish, speak, talk, tell, utter speech, to use speech, to utter speech. Also notice to gather, received among the sages. That's the Proverbs, the wise sayings. Also notice harvest, to gather them in, to gather them in. Now, the most popular one we had with the children was story time with Pastor Yisrael Hawkins. That was the most popular. Now, what we did was we took an animated pastor and we just took his sermons and put them in. That was it. We took the sermons, put them in, and then there's questions at the end the children have to answer. Notice 43:20, 29:22, and 487. Now, if this is evil, we just showed how through the fashion, Gematria shows if it's evil, it's evil. Well, starting with word 43:20, notice it's the word Micaiah. And of course, it says, who is like Jah? But if you look at your book of Yahweh, what does Micaiah say? Who is like Yahweh? Don't we go around singing that constantly? Who is like Yahweh? Notice it was from word, Hebrew word 29:22, from 29:21, and it says a sense of covering, a lamb, a covering, a place of protection. And who is the lamb? Yahshua, our Passover lamb. Who does Yisrael Hawkins work hand in hand with? Yahshua. Could it possibly show that? It's possible. Notice, once again, we have the covering the lamb, and then it comes from the word 29:24, a lamb, 29:22, a lamb, still showing a lamb. And then we had 487, and notice, oak of the king. Oak of the king from 427. Oak from the word 424, an oak or other strong tree from 352. Now 487 from 427 to 428, oak of the king. But notice we have from 428 to 427, a king. A king. All of this coming from the peace tunes. A king. Royal. Notice it also means from 4427 to reign. Ascend to the throne. To induct into royalty. To set up. To take counsel. Be turning over to Zechariah chapter 6 and verse 13. To begin, to make, to reign, and to rule. To make and to rule. So what are these peace tunes trying to teach our children? What are they trying to teach when we bring them out? One thing we've never done, we've never brought out entertainment in our peace tunes. No entertainment, no grotesque pictures, no making fun of people, no tearing people down. We've only brought out education. And in Zechariah 6:13 should be very familiar. Remember, and he will build the house of Yahweh. Who? The one who is like Yahweh, Yisrael Hawkins. And he will bear glory, and he will sit, and notice, rule. He will sit and rule on his throne, in his position, in the position that Yahweh has allotted him, and he will be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace, notice it says to take counsel, the council of the peaceful solution will be between them both. And that's all that the house of Yahweh has ever offered, because even with the education of our children, we have never bowed a knee to the gods, and we never will. At this time, if everyone will please stand, I would like to introduce the greatest teacher in the world, the great Kahan Yisrael, Abel Hawkins.
Man, all I can say is, wow, this house is full. But come on, we can get one more in. Praise God. You're yours, Father Yahweh. You may be seated. That's what I said. Praise Yahweh. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I think Yahweh's house has to be convinced first. And of course, that's what Yahweh has done today. And he's been doing it for several years now, but the stuff that was brought out today, I don't think you'll ever forget it. And I'll guarantee you, you'll never forget this afternoon. Don't miss this afternoon. You'll never forget what Yahweh has in store for this afternoon. The 777, that's already been brought out, so I won't talk about that one. I got to get some information here on reaching the world that is rather exciting. Article sent to the newspapers, Israel Hawkins says war, school shootings, disease, unnatural disasters have same root cause in this new publication. And that's a unusually high number for first. That's 113,000 impressions already. It's more than that now. They said it's more than probably 120,000 or more. If I had it, I'd read it. The Vatican, I don't want to go into that one right now. I want to get to where we left off the other day, and hoping you remember what I'm trying to show. If you go over to Daniel, the menorah that Yahweh put over the sanctuary, he put it there. Only he and Yahshua can do that, you know. Satan doesn't have the power. In fact, she can't come near his house. She knows she's barred from it. But that menorah being put over the sanctuary, of course, that was several pictures was taken of that. And then there was a lot of work done on it for several days to bring out the details. But Yahweh is convincing his house. I don't see how anyone could keep from believing after seeing and hearing what was brought forth this morning. This is so amazing. No one can do that but Yahweh and Yahshua. And this fits right in, you know, because to the line of sermons that I've been leading up to show you the explanation of what Daniel 12 is all about. And the numbers he gave for us there, the years that he gave for us to look at. But that menorah, that represents seven united works. And I've never seen the ones before me, but I know that I'm in unity with each one of them. I've read all their works, and I find nothing that I would disagree with. In those seven works, they all taught and practiced the laws of Yahweh. They taught the prophecies of Yahweh. Those prophecies prove themselves because they come true. No one can foretell the future except Yahweh himself. Yahshua even said that he didn't know. He didn't know. Only Yahweh in heaven knows this. And he'll reveal it. He's going to reveal all these secrets, he said. You remember that? Remember where? Come on now, Revelations. There you go, I heard it. Did I hear it over here? Revelations 10:7. He tells you when it's going to be revealed. It's his last work, the last lamp on the lampstand. if you noticed that western light still burning, It's only one. Oh, boy. That's the one that the law forbids that it ever go out. Yahweh's law forbids that it ever go out. And Yahshua added to that and says, the gates of hell will not prevail against this work, this seventh work. I'm going to get strong enough one of these days to quit crying. Quit tears from flowing, quit emotions, getting emotional. No, I'm not. I want my emotions. But I want you to turn over to Daniel 12. And remember, keep that in mind, the seven works of Yahweh. He displayed those seven works for all to see, but not all to understand. And he hid it from the wise and the prudent, he said. And he shows it unto babes and sucklings. And of course, those babes and sucklings, seven works now. And then you have, yeah, 777. There you go. The two witnesses and Yahshua. 777. Now, seven goes with six, too. Don't forget that. And the seven works right along with six, as the meaning goes. Seven represents Yahweh. Six represents destruction. Seven represents peace. Six represents war, terror, sickness, disease, and so forth. But that's the reason you see the seven refers to six, and six refers to seven in the explanations or dictionaries of the Hebrew language. In Daniel 12:7, we see here. He says, "I heard the man clothed in linen. In fact, he saw these two men, and one of them clothed in linen." And he asked him about the time. When will these things be? And he talked about the seven-year peace plan that was signed by Clinton, Rabin, and Arafat. And that we're the only ones that's ever brought that out, and we showed it in the Mark of the Beast long before it came to pass. I wrote about it in 76. It didn't come to pass till 1993, unless my memory serves me wrong. That's the date that it came to pass with President Bill Clinton as the leader of this. A seven-year peace plan. And these two, this man in linen, talked about this and showed this time, times, and dividing of times that has to do with that seven-year peace plan. And it's also shown in Revelation 11. But what I want you to see here, he says this time and times and a half time or divided time, as the margin shows you there also, when Yahweh will have accomplished pouring out his power. That should be strength there. That's what it means. You'd never understand it unless you understand it along with other scriptures. So the word power there. Word power, it means strength, and pouring it out through his holy people. That's a work assigned for them to do right there. Through his holy people, all of these things will be finished. All of these prophecies up until that time period will be finished. See, so it's a job that he's pointing out to us here. If you remember, just turn to Isaiah 43, Isaiah 44, and Isaiah 44, and verse 3, Isaiah 44 and verse 3, for I will pour water upon him who is thirsty and floods upon dry ground. I will pour out my spirit. Yochanan 6:63, my spirit, which is my laws, he said. Flesh means nothing. Flesh means nothing. Remember, that's the words of the Savior. It's worthless. It's the laws of Yahweh that is the spirit of Yahweh. It's also the strength that turns you from evil to righteousness. The strength of Yahweh, his laws, his statutes, his judgment. My spirit, the laws of Yahweh is the strength of Yahweh. Now, what he's saying in Daniel now is that this is going to be accomplished. And he saw the two people there, and he spoke to the one in linen that would accomplish this. And he says, pour out my spirit upon your seed, and your offspring. That's ones converted to preaching, to my teachings, to Yahweh's teachings in the last days through his house, and those born into this family, this house. And then he goes on and says, who can foretell these? Verse 7. And then he tells you right there who he's going to have to foretell these. They're going to build a house, the one clothed in linen. And, of course, Zechariah 4 is the next one that shows his strength. Zechariah 4, and look at verse 12. Zechariah 4, verse 12. Where he says, Then I spoke to him again and said to him, what are these two olive branches which through the two golden pipes, there's your menorah now, that he put over the sanctuary at just the right time for you to see, to tie it in with today's sermons, but also the work we've done in the past. Even put the temple model behind it. You can't beat that, brother. No way. But the two olive branches, which through the two golden pipes, the menorah, the last two works, emptied the golden oil through them to the one spoken of in Isaiah, the seed and the offspring. That's the only ones that's going to get it. They're not going to get it anywhere else in the world. Yahweh says, I will establish my house. Yahshua says, go to that house. Seek it, and then go to it. And practice righteousness. Seek his righteousness. That's where you'll find it. That's the only place you'll find it, is at his house. Proverbs 10. If you don't get these scriptures and remember them now, you won't understand when I bring out this number that I mentioned to you the other day, last day I spoke. Proverbs 10 and verse 29. Everybody got it? Now remember, this is pouring out his strength. That's what the prophecy he gave you. See, this is the prophecy he gave you in Daniel. And you got to know this other here to know what Daniel is talking about. Otherwise, you'd think you need to go out here and do some pumping iron or something. You know, that's what the world thinks. And through your strength of arm or your strength of war, possess these things. Well, in Proverbs 10 and verse 29, the way of Yahweh is strength. Strength. That is strength of righteousness. Unity. Determined to live righteously as Yahweh shows us and tells us will bring life eternal. The doctrines of life, as Acts 7 gives you. The way of Yahweh is strength to those who practice righteousness. You see that? It's strength to those who practice righteousness. It shows them how. But destruction will come upon workers of iniquity. That iniquity, doing away with the law. Malachi 4. Malachi, the fourth chapter. Verse 5, Malachi 4, verse 5. You got to get this, brother, and you got to get it in your head, or you won't never understand Daniel 12. Behold, I will send Eliyah, the law and the prophets. The word Eliyah. Eliyah is dead. We're going to resurrect him. There's a time of the resurrection, which is also spoken of by in Daniel 12. It's all the same time period, and you're going to do this. You're going to be instrumental in resurrecting Eliyah, whose name meant strength of Yahweh. The laws and the prophets, which is the strength of Yahweh. Well, the King James Version, you know, just put Eliyah, which is the strength of Yahweh, before the coming of that great and dreadful day. That great and dreadful day of burning. The one-hour war. Be turning over to Romans. Romans, the first chapter. Romans 1:16. For I am not ashamed of the message, for it is the strength of Yahweh. The message of all seven lights. Of all seven lights brought forth the strength of Yahweh. I'm not ashamed of this message of Yahweh. It is the strength of Yahweh unto life everlasting. That's the laws and the prophets. It's the strength of Yahweh to life everlasting for everyone who believes all that the prophets have spoken, says Yahshua, Luke 24, verse 25, who says, only fools. It's only the fools that can't believe. Now, everyone who believes to the Yahudia first and also to the Greeks, that's a little bit mistranslated, but David will get that. I've got David working day and night, and sometimes I have to lay more on him, but he's been a beloved companion since 1981. long hours. And Matithiah, turn back to Matithiah now, for Yeshua's teaching on this same subject. Matithiah, the 11th chapter. Let's go back up to verse 12. This gives you the start, and I won't give you any more today on this because you've got to understand more than this. But this right here is actually, Daniel is speaking of Yochanan here, and Yahshua is speaking of the same time period that Daniel 12 is speaking. So get this in your mind. It wouldn't hurt if you'd read these scriptures over and over for a while till I can cover this subject. This is the hardest subject I've ever taught. But you can understand it if you get all of these scriptures and start craving these scriptures, craving understanding, and get these in your mind to where it will refer you to other scriptures where you can combine it all and see the full picture. Verse 12 says, from the time of Yochanan the immerser until now. Starting from that time period. And that's where Daniel starts also. In chapter 12. The kingdom of Yahweh has been advancing forcefully. That's mistranslated. It's suffering violence, actually. And forceful men lay hold on it. So remember that scripture right there. And let's read on. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until Yochanan. So he backs up what he says here from the time of Yochanan. Because, then he says, get this, because all the prophets and the law prophesied unto Yochanan. And if you're willing to accept it, this is the strength of Yahweh. Remember what the strength of Yahweh is, the law and the prophets. The law and the prophecies, as we just read in Romans. We just read it in Malachi 4:5, we just read it in Proverbs 10:29, Zechariah 4:12, and Isaiah 44:3. All of these scriptures tell you the same thing. For if you are willing to accept this, this is the strength of Yahweh. The laws and the prophets are the strength of Yahweh. Verse 13, for all the prophets and the law prophesied until Yochanan. That's where their work stopped. Their work stopped. And another work was in preparation. The next work was in preparation. And this is what I want you to understand, because the way the scriptures is written, you think, well, these two guys were born and Yahweh zapped them and they went to telling this and that. The preparation for these two witnesses, for this work to begin, the preparation for it began many, many generations ago. And it was strictly guarded down to our time period. In fact, every one of you is the same thing. You were called by Yahweh long before you were born. The alarm just went off in your head a few days ago, but you were in Yahweh's plan from the beginning. And I do mean that, brethren. Everyone that's ever been born that's been used in Yahweh's work was planned from the beginning. And Yahweh can see each one of you all the time, and the work that you're doing, He knows it all the time. You're before Him all the time on this so-called sea of glass that I've explained in detail. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please get those. Don't starve yourself of that information. But the preparation for this work, it began long before Daniel, but Daniel shows it plainly, and he shows the numbers and the years and gives you an exact date here for this and what they would have to accomplish this job. That took 2,570 years. Something like that. Something close. I'm letting all these figures go through my mind here, but something like that to prepare for the work that you and I are doing here today. In the plans, undercover, so to speak, in secret, this is a secret that Yahweh said His secrets would be revealed. His would be finished. Yes, He kept it secret. He said that the wise and prudent will not understand this. They'd try to block it. He'd be giving them ammunition to use against Him. But he wrote it in black and white for everyone to see. Right? We have it before us right now. He wrote it. But He wrote it in a way, here a little and there a little, so the average person, or any person, unless their heart is in this, to where they're really studying and getting these things in their mind, there is no way you could put it together. The concordances, they can't put it together. They can put words together, but only you can say, after you see this, this is true. I can point it out to you, but flesh and blood only cannot show this to you. That's what the words of Yahshua. Flesh and blood only didn't show this to you. There was something from Yahweh that had to ring a bell in your mind, in your subconscious mind, or their conscious mind, to bring you to Me, so we could work together, you and I, and bring this light, this seventh light, which is the knowledge of righteousness and the knowledge of the prophecies, because it reveals the great secrets of Yahweh and His plan. There's no other work on the face of the earth doing this. 13, for all the prophets and the law prophesied unto Yochanan. Get that in your head. You got to have it. And if you are willing to accept it, this is the strength of Yahweh, which was to come. The laws and the prophecies. Let's go back to Daniel. Now, 12 again. Verse 10, many will be purified at that time. Many will be purified at that time. So this is a work, see, that he's speaking of here, a great work. Many are going to be purified in this time period that Daniel is speaking of. And he's speaking of several thousand years planning and bringing to pass. We are the instruments in the last part of this preparation for this work. We're the instruments Yahweh uses to bring about this great, this many will be purified and made white. Let's see, many will be purified and made white and tried. So you have a testing period here like you did in Exodus 20:20. Yahweh is here to test you to see if he can trust you or not. And you've got to prove it. You've got to prove it to heaven and earth that you can be trusted. He shows that to you in Deuteronomy 30. And if your heart is not in it, you won't stay. Start craving it. Put it on top of everything. Seek it first. Do it so that you'll get used to it. Like you do a drink of water or leavened bread that Yahweh tells you to do without. Get it to where you start craving it. And every time you have a few minutes, it'll come into your mind. Let me get this book and read it. Let me get this paper, this last newsletter. You know, these things will come into your mind and you'll start craving feeding your brain. You'll start craving feeding your brain with this strength of Yahweh. Okay, verse 11 now. And from the time that the daily will be taken away, and the Lord of heaven, this right here, this Lord of heaven, we had a booth at the West Texas Fair and Rodeo several years ago. Booth number 7, I believe, or maybe it was 777. we had a booth. David and I left the booth because we had some others come and was running the booth for a while, and we took a break. We came by Bible bookstore booth and created a couple of enemies there because we told them, David was more bold than I was, so he strongly said, well, hand me that book right there. They had it on their shelf. Well, it was the Interpreter's Bible Dictionary, which I had a set of them, and I showed the name to David and some other stuff in these dictionaries. So David told the guy, said, hand me that book right there. And he told him what volume, it's 6 or 7 volumes of it. And David opened it up, and the guy was still talking Jesus and so forth to us and trying to convert us. And David said, did you ever read this right here? And put his finger on the page. And the guy, his eyes got big. You could tell he got a frown on his face. And he was selling it, but he didn't believe what he was selling. But it showed how that abomination of desolation is the Lord of the heavenly habitation. That was part of it. Then the name was also shown. David showed him the name. But he didn't convert. He became an enemy to the house. But 1,000... 200 1,290 days. So he gives you an exact date. Who could do that except Yahweh? And it's to be revealed in the last days, of course. And blessed is he that who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. It shows this preparation now for this work that you see in Zechariah 4, verse 5. Let's turn back there again. Zechariah 4, because it's a preparation for a work. The seventh work of the seventh Moloch, which means the seventh light on the seven lampstand that we saw over the sanctuary before this feast, just before this feast, and was shown to you this morning plainly. We can't put clouds up there. We didn't do this by any means. I didn't even have a wood stove burning this morning or that morning. I wasn't sending up smoke signals by any means. This thing was put up there by Yahweh, and it was kept there for quite a while for everyone to get pictures of. Here in Zechariah now, chapter 4 and verse 5, chapter 4 and verse 5, and the Moloch who talked with me answered and said unto me, do you not know what these are? He's asking about the olive trees in verse 3. Go on down now to read verse 5 again. Do you not know who these are, what these are? And look at verse 6. And he answered and spoke with me, saying, this is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel, that's the one who opposes Babylon, saying, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. My spirit? Yochanan 6:63. Look at chapter 5. Chapter 5. And look at verse 5 there. Then the Moloch, who was speaking with me, came forward and said to me, lift up your eyes now and understand that which is sent by commandment. And verse 6, the last part of verse 6, this is honor, it's knowledge, it's understanding throughout the whole earth. That's never been done before, but this too now is the work that Daniel spoke of when he gives you a time and a date here. Gives you the date of years in Zechariah. Zechariah, this was written in 519. 519. I want you to see in verse 7, I will take away the blood from his mouth, and this abomination from between his teeth, but he too will be a remnant for our father, and will be as a leader in Yada. Yada also ties into this. That's Genesis 49, verse 10. And then I will encamp around my house like a guard at this time. Now he's speaking of this work that began in chapter 6, there, shown in chapter 6, that was brought out so plainly to this morning. The work between Yahshua the high priest and the house of Yahweh in these last days. Yahweh says, then I will encamp around my house like a guard against those who march in and out. No more will an oppressor overrun them. For now my eyes are watching over them. And then he shows you in the very next verse where this started now with the prophecy of Genesis 49. The king comes to you. The king of this work right here comes to you, he is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on donkeys. Two donkeys. This in Daniel is showing the wars, written in 594 BY, by the way, showing the wars and the scattering of the 12 tribes in order to stop Yahshua from being born. Now, after he was born, of course, he was still hidden, taken to Egypt. Look at chapter 6 of Zechariah here. Chapter 6 and verse 8. He was still taken to Egypt and kept for a certain time till the king, that king who was wanting to kill him, to keep him from... this king, you've got to remember that Yochanan 8:44, Satan is your teacher and you will do what Satan wants you to do. Now that's what's going on with the whole world today. That's the reason they're preparing for national disaster, depopulation, and so forth. Well, chapter 6 now in verse 8. Chapter 6 and verse 8. He says, and he called to me and spoke to me, saying, behold, these that go towards the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country. Then the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, accept silver and gold from the captives and from the... This, I don't have the correct translation, but look on down to verse 11 there, and that's where you see the high priest. Take the silver and gold and make crowns and set them up on the head of Yahshua, son of, and we have Yahzadek there. Strong's Concordance shows this is Yahweh, son of Yahweh, the high priest, Hebrews 10:21. Speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. This is a command given to Yahshua, who is high priest. Behold the man who is the branch, for he will branch out and he will build the house of Yahweh. In Genesis, let's go to Genesis now. Genesis. Satan's job from the beginning, when she turned against Yahweh, her job that she latched on to, her and the gods, chapter 2, Genesis chapter 2, was to prevent the work of Yahweh. Yahweh not only prophesied his works, but he prophesied her moves also that she would be doing, and shows us in these last days, not so much the world, the workers then, as showing us in these last days. Genesis 2 and verse 9 says, and out of the ground Yahweh made every tree grow, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of righteousness and evil. Then 3, 1 through 6, you're familiar with that, I know. Well, verse 5, for he knows that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes will be opened, and you will be as gods, knowing evil. Verse 6, so when the woman saw that the tree was desirable for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree desirable to make one wise, she took of the fruit of the tree, and she gave it to her husband, and he ate also. Verse 7 shows the sin. They committed sin. Look at verse 14 now. Verse 14. So Yahweh said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are bitterly cursed. I established you over all living things. Now this is what the job that Satan had, or Hillel, the wife of Yahweh, who became Satan the devil. And I established you over all flesh on the ground, but your ability to bring forth life from the dust will be taken away, or has been taken away from your moves against. I brought this out about how this works. It's the microorganisms. They simply stopped obeying her. They would have been fighting each other if they would have left Yahweh's kingdom and going to her. You will go to your, now this is punishment, it's not punishment, but prophesied end. You will go to your prophesied end, and you will be destroyed on that day. Well, now, we've got that day, but we've got her work lined up until way after the 1,000-year reign period. 1,000-year reign. Because the resurrection, the working with Yahshua training is going to last 1,000 years. That's before we resurrect the dead. We'll be training for that period for 1,000 years with Yahshua and Yahweh, and then we'll resurrect the dead, and she will be loosed. Satan will be loosed at that time period and go forth to deceive again, or try to deceive again, for 100 years. Well, that day you will go to your punishment or your prophesied end in that day, and you will be destroyed. That is, you destroy yourself on that day. And this is not translated properly. I think we did this work already. I know we did, but I don't have the proper translation. But you'll destroy yourself on that day that will finish your life, Yahweh says. And I will put enmity between you and the woman. That is, you have put. This, what she has done, has brought about enmity between her. It's her that's jealous of the woman. The woman always, remember, the woman is the one that brought forth Yahshua. Now, this is shown in Revelations. Remember, Revelations, the 12th chapter. We'll read it later. But there's enmity between her and the woman. The woman being the house of Yahweh, the work of Yahweh, this one of the six works of Yahweh that brought in that 4,000 years, took 4,000 years to bring forth Yahshua. 4,000 years. Now this was a line of breeding where each one contributed a certain thing to Yahshua's character. And when the time came for the woman to give birth, Satan was trying to destroy the woman. And the woman was caught. Satan was trying to destroy the child, standing before the woman to destroy the child. The woman was taken into the next work, taken into the ends of the earth. That's all shown in Revelations 12. I don't want to go back into that today by any means, but you need to get that information. A woman was to bear a child and nourish that child and to feed him scripturally and bring him into a position to prophesy of the three of the time, and the dividing of time. That is all shown in chapter 12, and the two that was to do that was shown in chapter 11 of Revelation. Get it? It's very interesting. Now, you will go to your prophesied end, and you will destroy yourself. Now, verse 15, and I will put enmity, no, you have put enmity between you and this woman that will be doing my work, Yahweh's work. Satan hates the woman. The woman is always, it started with Abel, and his work, written for us, we're the only ones that understand it now. Yahshua used it and spoke of it, Abel's work, even spoke of him being righteous in his days on earth. But this woman started there, come down from seven prophesied works. This is the seventh woman. The products, you're the products of the seventh, of the work of the seventh woman. Put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and that's what you see right now. They're killing off all forms of holiness. Well, it started now with Cain, then came the flood, then Yahweh took Noah, saved Noah, and then brought him forward up until Yahshua was born. That bloodline brought him forward so he would live without sin. His character was selected and put into him and his parents before him. He was taught the laws by them, that woman at work. You can see the woman at work in Yahshua, and of course his parents and those associated with Yahshua at that time was part of that work or that woman. Notice 16, to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrows. No, it's not that way. You have greatly multiplied your sorrows. Verse 17, then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you must not eat of it, cursed will be the ground. The ground, he's speaking again now, the microorganisms that control the earth. Do I have that article? I got to show you something right here. We're in verse 17. The science of physics. They're now saying that the earth will destroy itself. That's not it. Here it is. Ah! Harvard scientists predict the end of the universe. While it's certainly a possibility, this prediction will take place. The scientists behind a study from researchers at Harvard University have determined that the end of the universe will be around 10 to 139 years. At this point, the laws of physics may start to deteriorate, taking the universe with it. Now, there, of course, physics, it's a study of science of where you study what energy does to material, or how they interchange and perform the work of Yahweh, the microorganisms. I want to call it that. They call it energy, but they don't realize that this energy is coming from the microorganisms. They call it matter, which they don't realize that too comes from another kingdom of microorganisms. And these two, they do know now, and this is shown in this article. They do know that the physics that are set by law that govern the earth, and they show that, and the atmosphere are breaking down, and they are being destroyed. They don't know how, they don't know why, they just know that they're breaking down, and they're saying this universe cannot last unless, and they didn't say this, I'm saying it, unless another power keeps this from taking place. Now, that's an article, I'll try to get it in print for you and bring it out in a newsletter because it is very important. We were in, where were we at? Genesis 3, verse 17. Now, cursed will be the ground. Now, Yahweh shows this here as early as Genesis, what this article on physics is actually bringing, talking about. And the curses, what she's doing, and she's trying to do this. I mean, this is her job, her kingdom that she has chosen, which by the way, was pretty popular. You know, she drew about a third of Yahweh's creation with her in this power play to rise above Yahweh, as is shown in Isaiah 14. So, in her maneuvers now, she has maneuvered for 4,000 years, up to 4,000 years, to kill Yochanan, that was one, and to try to kill the Savior, or prevent the Savior. She was actually in hopes of preventing the Savior, Yeshua, which was the prophesied one of Genesis 49:10. He was prophesied to be to hold the righteous scepter, to make the scepter righteous, not evil, as Yada has held it for 6,000 years now. We see that the curse will be, you'll be cursed from the ground. Cursed will be the ground for your sake, for what you have done, what you're doing. The ground is cursed. In toil you will eat from it all the days of your life. This, you're going to be eating of these curses, and you're causing others that follow you to eat of these curses. Both thorns and thistles, it will bring forth for you. You shall eat the herbs of the field. In the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken. For dust you were, and to dust you will return. Skip on down to verse 22. Then Yahweh said, behold, the man has become like one that has begun to know righteousness and evil. And now he must not be allowed to put out his hand also and take of the tree of life. Well, that's where it was shut off. That's where it was stopped. Right there. It was shut off. Man brought death upon himself. Now this, in Daniel, which was written in 538, Daniel says, let's turn there. This will be the last scripture for this morning. In Daniel 9, and I want you to notice what Yahweh put right under her nose and gives the date, and yet kept it hidden. Gives the date of the time of Yahshua here, but kept it hidden from the world. Now certain of the woman that brought forth this string of bloodline to Yahshua, certain of them knew when Yahshua was going to be born. It was shown to them by Yahweh's prophet Daniel, right here in chapter 9. Look at verse 26. And after 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off. This shows when he's going to die. After 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off without a successor, and the people of the prince that will come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will be with a flood. And unto the end, speaking of another, our time period here, this is the end, speaking of the last generation, as Yahshua showed us, the end of the war's desolation. Desolation, that's Revelations, of course, 18, with the 1 hour burning. It starts off with the 70 weeks, but Yahweh cut it up into pieces here. And he said, this will take place. Well, all of this that Daniel gave here in 538 BY, all of this that he gave right here was speaking of starting with this 70 weeks are determined here, and bringing in, if you notice the last part there, bringing in everlasting righteousness, which is speaking of us. Because we're the ones that's bringing in, we have both the work of the prophets and the work of the apostles. They laid the foundation for us to understanding the prophecies of the prophets. So this bringing in everlasting righteousness is assigned to us in these last days. That's our job, the house of Yahweh. And we're doing it. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and rebuild Jerusalem to the Messiah, the Prince, will be, and he gives you the dates here. Well, of course, there was certain of the woman, as I said, that knew this time period, and they came looking for Yahshua. And this was quite a process. And of course, they didn't give up on their job. The news spread. It wasn't like the news today where, you know, it's almost instant. But it went, and the things they were seeking went before it. Finally, the king was involved in it, and he was determined then to kill Yahshua under inspiration of Satan, of course. So the news came. Yahshua was born. He was taken to Egypt until that king that she had given this inspiration died. Then he was brought back to Galilee. He was trained. He made his debut when he was 12 years old and made quite an impression. Then he came back at the age of 26 and presented himself again. At that time, he had a large following, and they knew that he was a prophet. So they started reckoning with him as one who could be a leader for Satan. Satan then, that is her deceived leaders, took him and showed him all the kingdoms. Now get this, because this was Yada. This was Yada's kingdom. And he was in control of all these kingdoms of the known world at that time. And they were pulling tribute through the roving army. If you think of Vespasian, he had an army that was, I don't think they could count it. And he had branches, and he sent generals and throughout the lands. And he had it all under control, and this is what was offered Yahshua. All the kingdoms of the earth, and this all started now, was predicted by Daniel from the fourth beast, was going to take place. About 500 years later, they had this huge army that was in control of everything. throughout the earth at that time. Now that's what the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and Herodians offered Yahshua. If you will come worship the gods with us, you can have these things. It's all ours to give. The way that it's written in the scriptures, Satan was the inspiration that led this so-called temptation about. Yahshua wasn't interested in it. He had a totally different plow to pull, and that was the righteousness of Yahweh. And he kept quoting scriptures to these people. Well, of course, he let himself be known, and after they couldn't persuade him to join them, then they started wanting to kill him. They feared, now get this picture too, because even though they were in control, it was like the Vatican today and the writing that is going on throughout the world. And if they couldn't, if they said the wrong thing, there was an uproar. And they thought that Yahshua was a prophet, so they were afraid. The kings were afraid of them, of the crowd. This is why he didn't kill Yochanan the very first thing, Yochanan the Immerser. I've got to get some of this planted in your mind. But this was the kingdoms. It was owned by Yada. All the kingdoms of the earth were under his control at that time with a huge roving army. And of course, Jerusalem was the eighth crusade that was still going. They didn't kill all the Sabbath keepers. They didn't shut the mouths of the woman. And the word continued to spread. My family fled Europe because of this and because of the fear, and they didn't want to be involved in war. And of course, they came to either Kentucky or Tennessee, I don't know which. They migrated from there to Texas because of the Civil War. They didn't want to be involved in the Civil War. So my ancestors migrated to Texas and Oklahoma. And from there then, the woman was hidden and nourished up two brothers that Yahweh called his two witnesses, born in the ends of the earth. Remember that. Prophesied to be born in the ends of the earth. Oklahoma was the ends of the earth. It was the last land run. They actually ran for land. And given away the last parts of the earth, they thought. And it was actually called that. And kept us under conditions unlivable. They called it ungodly. Ungodly land. Well, it was ungodly to my family. It was Yahweh that was leading and guiding for this work now, this work that was planned in Genesis 49. Get that. This is thousands of years. Genesis 49. Thither the donkeys to the vine. I am the vine, you are the branches. Yahshua said that. I am the vine. Don't call him a liar. He's the vine. We are the branches. And the chosen branch was chosen to build the house of Yahweh, to establish the house of Yahweh, Zechariah. But in Genesis 49:10, from that time until now is thousands of years in planning, in watching that plan proceed, in guiding everyone, every person, having leadership and maneuvering to guide that person who Yahweh says is going to be in my work, guide them to his house here today. Thousands of years of planning and for preparation and doing it. And you're here, and we're taking the message to the world. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next leader. I love you.